You start walking toward the other side, your hands floating on the surface, in no rush at all. The water is staying level now, and you take your time with each step, feeling the sand and river-washed stones stimulating pressure points on your bare feet. As you approach the middle of the stream, you reach a deeper spot, and the water starts to travel higher up your waist and ribs until it's just covering your entire liver area. That's as high as the water will get. You keep going on your slow walk, pacing yourself so that traveling from one side to the other will take no less than 20 minutes. The meditation can last longer if you'd like. It can be as long as you want. Keep envisioning yourself stepping toward the bank on the other side, where trees and grass await. Eventually, the water level will start to lower down to your waist. As you get closer to the bank, it will get lower and lower until it's at your feet and you're walking out and up onto the grass. See yourself lying down in the grass and listen to the water running. When you're ready, come out of the meditation. You've just given your liver support with bile production, so it can aid digestion of fats and build its bile reserves. Killing viruses and other pathogens meditation. Sunlight contains mysterious forces, and when we're exposed to it in our everyday lives, it enters into certain organs for access later. The sun's rays are complex. They contain an infinite amount of information to which the human body connects. Medical research and science have no idea that sunlight is full of so much more healing and life force than what's been discovered. If sun rays could be weighed, measured, and analyzed, the discoveries would be profound and even unbelievable. It's completely unknown that as you've received these rays throughout life, some have gone directly into your liver. Whenever your liver was doing well, it was able to bank the ones it didn't put to use in the moment. Even if your liver's not too healthy right now and is unable to bank new rays, it has old rays stored. This meditation is all about activating the unused sunlight your liver has been holding onto and unleashing its raw power. Pick a quiet time of day and a place to lie or sit down that's out of the sun. As much as the sun can help us and support the immune system at other times, there are a few reasons to stay out of the sun with this one. For one, you're going to imagine that you are in the sun, and that you're opening your eyes wide and looking directly at it. If you really are out in it, you'll have to work on blocking out the real sun. Plus, you could accidentally open your eyes and damage them by looking into it. You want to be able to let in every last drop of visualized sunlight with this meditation, and being out in the actual sun will prevent that. For another, when you're doing a meditation while lying out in the sun, it's easy to fall asleep and get burned. And by the way, your powers of envisioning are going to do the work here. So this isn't about turning the heat up to 100 degrees or visiting a sauna either to emulate the sun's warmth. Let your mind do the work. It will flip the switch to release past sunlight from inside your liver. As you're lying or sitting in a comfortable spot, envision that you're lying in a secluded place in the sun. If you'd like, it could be a beach. You may prefer to imagine that you're in a field. Whatever makes you feel best. Let the naturist side of you come out and imagine that you're lying there without any clothes on in your safe, private area. Keeping your actual eyes closed, imagine that you're opening them to the sun, which is looking down at you from the sky and sending its rays deep into your liver. Now see those visualized sun rays radiating, connecting to and bringing to life real sun rays of the past that your liver has stored inside of it. Envision a switch turning on that activates the stored rays so that they become powerful light that destroys pathogens such as viruses that reside in the liver. As the light beams throughout the organ, see it as a weapon against those symptom-related, disease-related pathogens that can cause everything from acne to SIBO to autoimmune illness to tumors, cysts, and cancerous tissue. Picture a little microbe-sized bug and imagine the light entering, surrounding, and killing it. Every time you take a deep breath in and release it, see the light getting stronger throughout your liver and bringing its power into your liver's dark, hidden crevices, driving out any critters that have taken advantage. With both the inhale and the exhale, see that light grow. Ideally, this meditation should last between 25 and 45 minutes. Any longer and you'll get sunburned. Kidding. You can't get sunburned if you're doing this meditation right. Strengthening your liver's immune system, morning meditation. Try this meditation any time between waking and noon. If you can, start out lying on your stomach. If you can't, lie on your side. On the inhale, see yourself breathing amethyst or violet light into your liver from the back. Now exhale the same color. Keep breathing the light in and out. Don't force an unusual breathing pattern. For this to stimulate the liver's immune system, your breath needs to be at your normal and natural rhythm. After about 5 minutes, flip onto your back if you can. Continue to inhale and exhale the amethyst or violet light, this time bringing it in and out of the front of your liver. Once 5 minutes have passed on your back, flip again so that you're lying on your stomach and breathing the light into your liver from the back. And do that for 5 more minutes. Flip onto your back one last time and breathe the colorful light in and out of the front of your liver for 5 final minutes. It's fine if they weren't perfect 5-minute intervals. In the end, it should add up to about 20 minutes total. Finally, slowly stand, or sit if you can't, and then take in a deep breath of the amethyst or violet light, seeing it enter into your liver from both the front and back at once. As you breathe out, send the light out from both sides. Stay standing or sitting for 1 to 2 minutes, continuing to inhale and exhale the light deeper than before. Once you're finished, you can be off and running, having strengthened your liver's immune system, which is extremely important for guarding you against pathogen-caused illnesses and toxic exposures that hinder your liver's immune system and its ability to function at its best. Loosening liver fat cells, morning meditation. This is a meditation to perform upon waking. The earlier in the morning, the better it works. Lying flat on your back, carefully bend your right leg and bring that knee up toward your chest. If you have swollen joints, RA, a tricky back, or any other limitation, you don't have to bring your knee all the way up to your chest. Only do that if it's a position you're used to and works for you. Otherwise, bring your knee wherever's comfortable, maybe up to the point where you can reach it with your hands. If you can't move it at all, that's fine too. Only do what you're able. Hold for about 30 seconds. Drop the leg back down and lie flat for 30 seconds. Now bend your left leg and bring that knee toward you for 30 seconds. Drop the leg and lie flat for 30 seconds. That's one leg pump sequence. Repeat the sequence for a total of 4 times. What you'll be doing during this first part of the meditation is loosening up any fluid retention around the liver, relieving pressure in the lymphatic vessels as you pump out the fluid. If you can't do the movements, envision yourself doing them instead. After the leg pumps, stay relaxed and straightened out on your back. Rest both of your hands with fingers interlaced, if you'd like, over your liver area. Don't strain, relax your elbows. Imagine that your hands are magnets or suctions, loosening and drawing up fat cells from the organ. Envision an energy going upward to your hands, as though they have their own gravitational pull or other force that's freeing stagnant energy trapped inside the liver and drawing it up to them. Picture this any way you need to, whether as particles of sand falling upward or your own mental image. Continue for 10 minutes. Now return to the leg pumps, doing another 4 sequences. 8 leg pumps total, 4 on each side, with rests in between, all in roughly 30-second intervals. Follow that with another 10 minutes of lying flat, resting your hands over your liver as you visualize its fat cells awakening and moving around as the organ's energy comes unstuck. Finish with 4 leg pump sequences. This is a great meditation for pre-fatty, fatty, stagnant or sluggish liver to help encourage lymphatic drainage and disperse fats from the liver into the bloodstream and out of the body. Disease reversal, nighttime meditation. This nighttime meditation requires a little angelic work. Specifically, you're going to call upon the angels of order, who bring order to diseased, inflamed, or otherwise weakened livers. This angelic power applies to every liver condition. The same rules apply for calling upon angels as I've written in my previous books, namely, that you must ask for their help aloud. A whisper is fine, and sign language works if you can't speak. Before you get to bed, maybe as you're brushing your teeth, putting your kids to bed, or putting on your pajamas, say, "Angels of order, please come to do a healing sequence on my liver." If you get to bed and realize you forgot to ask earlier, that's fine. Say it now that you're there. When you're ready, lie down, close your eyes, and envision 3 angels around your bed. Everyone has a different way of picturing angels. Some people see light and wings. Some see light itself. Some see a figure within light. Some see a complete figure of a woman with wings. Some see a complete figure of a woman with no wings. Whatever you see, bring 3 of them to mind. The angels of disease reversal are female, not male. That much you need to know. Visualize the 3 angels walking around your bed, spaced evenly in a circle. If someone else is in bed with you, like a partner or a friend, that's fine. Keep thinking about the angels. You need to focus on them walking around the bed. See the angels of order taking their hands and creating a pressure of light in the circle and applying this pressure of light to your body so that it pushes into your liver. This light bypasses other parts of your body and is specifically meant for your liver, where it can shroud out disease, saturate and help shrink cysts and tumours, and repair damaged cells. It's angelic light for anything liver-related. If you have any symptom or condition mentioned at all in this book, from autoimmune to acne, this is helpful. Even if it's only a sluggish liver, the light is there to help reverse it. Keep picturing the angels circling your bed and sending light to your liver for as long as you would like. Whether 3 minutes, 5 minutes, half an hour, or until you fall asleep, do save this meditation for the evening hours. Eliminating toxins meditation. Your liver will already be detoxing on a daily basis as you eat the right foods for cleansing. Try the Liver Rescue Morning and the Liver Rescue 369. Sample the recipes and perhaps try the supplements in this audiobook. You can use this technique alongside everything you're already doing to offer an added level of detox. This meditation is geared to ease the liver of any tension or spasms. At the same time, it allows the liver to feel safe enough to detoxify without the concern that it will be called to duty in the moment. Have you ever had a task, job, or responsibility of some kind where you just needed to pause and get a breath of fresh air before heading back into the heat of the moment and the chaos, where you may be called upon at any moment to assist someone? Have you ever had your break cut short because you were called into action to perform, whether as a salesperson at a car dealership, a veterinary assistant at an animal hospital, a nurse at a caregiving facility, a cashier at a busy restaurant, or a parent of a young child? The liver needs that full moment of knowing that it's not going to be put under pressure or demanded to perform. This meditation helps allow the liver to release troublemakers in the midst of a busy time in its and your life. Take a few moments at any time of the day, whether morning, afternoon, or evening, and imagine a wall around you. Choose whatever wall works for you to feel safe and not imprisoned, whether that's a wall of light, trees, hedges, rose bushes, a favorite home, or a sacred building. As you're doing this, think privacy and peacefulness, and get into a mindset of being alone and not being bothered. Whether you're actually sitting at a table in a restaurant with people all around you, or doing this in a quiet, calm space. You can keep your eyes open and sit, lie down, or even stand. Once you envision that the world is locked out of your life, or at least that the hustle, bustle, and chaos are at a safe distance, tell your liver that you would like it to detox. Your liver will receive the message, and it will also sense that no adrenaline will be surging through your veins to saturate and overwork it. In turn, your liver will efficiently release small amounts of toxins alongside a chemical compound to direct and carry them safely out of the body. The meditation can last from 5 minutes to 20 or more if you'd like. Even after you've stopped and returned to the busyness of your life, the special chemical compounds that have been released will take over from there and continue to drive toxins out of your body throughout the rest of the day and night to free you up so you can live your life. The storm will pass. Peace be with you. When you find peace within yourself, by connecting to the living words you've absorbed throughout these pages, you become a beacon that lights the way for others. Chapter 41. The storm will pass. Peace be with you. If you're dealing with a health challenge, I know that finding peace can be one of your greatest struggles. Though you know now that the liver is the body's peacekeeper, and that bringing peace to your liver can change your life, if you're suffering in the moment, that peace may feel far away. All it takes is losing sleep for one night, having a cold for 1 week, or suffering with an injury for 1 month for peace to be disrupted. When you've been faced with a chronic illness that has lasted 2, 3, 5, 10 years or more, peace is that much harder to find. That's especially difficult, since it's one of the times you need peace most. It's why so many people who are chronically ill pursue spiritual endeavors to support their well-being, since their bodies remain a mystery. There are ways to find peace when you're sick. One is knowing what's wrong with you, taking away the mystery and realizing that your body didn't let you down. Another is knowing what to do to heal. A third is knowing that you can heal, especially now that you have the truth. The purpose of the words Spirit provides is to offer you each one of those elements. Discovering that troubled livers are behind so much suffering, how to care for our livers the way they're meant to be cared for, and that we can rescue our livers, this knowledge can instantly put you on the road to peace. If you're dealing with a symptom, injury or illness, remind yourself that your physical body is actively working to find peace for you. Even when you're ailing, your liver is orchestrating a peace mission, communicating with other organs and cells and the immune system and even the brain, trying to keep fellowship in the body and bring you to a peaceful internal state. By using the information in this book, you're giving your liver even more tools to keep the peace. Our bodies naturally work toward peace. All we need to do is support them. The soul of peace. There is another piece of peace, and that's having compassion for yourself. Compassion is the soul of peace, the power of peace, the path to peace, the life of peace, the source of peace, the answer to peace, the creator of peace. We think about peace as an absence of pain, suffering, disease, hatred, violence, war, when it's also about this presence of compassion. Why self-compassion and not self-love? Self-love is okay. It's about loving who you are, appreciating who you are, and it can reach into accepting who you are and what you look like. It seems to work perfectly for people when everything is going well. And then, what if they go through a hardship? When you're struggling and suffering, that's when the game changes. Self-love doesn't mean you're granting yourself a healing like self-compassion does. Self-love alone cannot grant you peace. When your focus is on loving yourself, it can accidentally bleed over into loving yourself more than anybody around you. Compassion is what wakes us up to the wider world. Love is not what keeps two people together either. When you're in the throes of a new romance and the finances are flowing and life is rosy, love can be plenty. When a challenge comes along, love is no longer enough because human love is not the creator of peace. How many relationships are, "I love you, I love you, I love you," until the day something goes wrong and the members of the couple become mortal enemies? Loving another can turn to hating that person very fast, unless compassion's involved. Compassion is the glue-like component in a relationship. It keeps love alive and breathing and stops love from becoming sour and turning to hate. If you look at love as an apple, compassion is its core. Same goes for self-love. Loving yourself without having self-compassion can flip to hating yourself all too easily. If you're suddenly facing chronic illness or an emotional challenge, self-love can vanish and self-hatred can take its place. Self-hatred is one of the greatest obstacles to peace. When an athlete is injured, it can so quickly turn to self-hatred because she feels disconnected from herself and can't achieve like before. The mum who could take care of everything until symptoms got in her way may start to doubt herself and feel like a failure. The employee who had every answer in the workplace and then suddenly can't do his job anymore because a condition is holding him back may start to despise himself, thinking he's less than and not needed anymore. It's not just our internal monologues that bring up these feelings. We may also hear from outside sources, in whatever form, whether stated aloud or not, that our illness is our fault. The misguided autoimmune theory of the body attacking itself, the misguided genetic theory that says faulty genes create illness, the misguided attempts to explain illness by saying you manifested it, these can make you hate the very fiber of your being. They're the ultimate peace destroyers of the body, mind, soul, heart, and spirit. If there's no self-compassion there to be a deeply rooted stronghold of peace. We have no idea that the liver sees us as its baby. An infant it must take care of and feed, and that it uses its compassionate nature to look out for us. We think instead that the body is giving up on us. We lose touch with all compassion for ourselves, if we even held compassion to begin with. It seems to disappear when an ache or pain has been with us too long. The longer the pain or symptom or illness, the further away self-compassion feels. We ask ourselves instead, "What's wrong with me?" In truth, compassion doesn't leave us. While it may seem like it's gone, really, it's closer than ever before, waiting for us to reach out and find it. Self-hatred can take on a life of its own. It's a beast that can't be tamed with anything other than compassion. That self-compassion must have meaning within it. It can't be an empty word thrown around. There's substance to compassion, and that's what must be tapped into and understood. Having compassion for yourself is a release of judgment, a release of debt, a permission slip allowing you to be forgiven as a human being. There are two types of forgiveness: normal forgiveness and compassionate forgiveness. Normal forgiveness doesn't bring with it peace. Compassionate forgiveness is real forgiveness. Having compassion for yourself is the true meaning of being forgiven. Forgiven especially for what you might have blamed yourself for that you did not create. Only compassion can free us from the judgments we've placed on ourselves. Even if we think we've made a mistake, and what we feel is a big mistake, compassion can still free us from the greedy beast of self-hatred. Chances are, that mistake is rather small in the big picture. We've all made mistakes. If you feel trapped within the prison of one, that this mistake has somehow locked you in with the beast of self-blame, merely the word self-compassion won't release you. Finding true compassion for yourself is what will unlock the cage, free you, and send the beast away. Self-compassion is a powerful revelation. It's a moment when you've been driven down to your knees and you feel the ultimate blessing of you've been forgiven from the highest source above. It's the feeling that being yourself matters, and it's also more than that. It's a connection to the knowledge that God and the heavens care about you. It's tapping into this ultimate kindness that's out there for you at the same time it's within. This revelation kicks out self-hatred, removes the venomous poison from your veins and from your soul. It is said, God is love, when God is not love alone. God is unconditional love. The human mind will always put conditions upon our love for ourselves and others. We can't help it. We think we can feel unconditional love. What we can really do is tap into compassion alongside our love. compassion plus love. That's the human version of unconditional love. God's unconditional love is bigger, more powerful. To feel anything approaching that, toward ourselves or other people, to experience a sense of peace, it's compassion we need to find. Often, when people think they have compassion for themselves, it's really confidence. That's what we build the world on now. Confidence, not compassion. The minute something goes wrong, confidence, like love, goes away. You can shape a lifetime around confidence, believing in yourself because of your achievements, and in the end, if you can't achieve bigger or better, or if you fail at something, confidence and belief in yourself can disappear with the flick of a switch. With the light off, the darkness of self-doubt takes its place. Confidence is important. We should all hold on to it when we can. It doesn't have the strength of compassion, though. Confidence is not the answer to self-hatred. It's not the home of peace. Confidence comes and goes with the wind. If there's no compassion when your confidence drops away, the damage becomes extreme to the health of your soul and body. If you hold compassion within, on the other hand, you can lose confidence and it won't faze you. You can fail at something. You can get sick. Someone you had confidence in can let you down, and compassion remains. Whether you believe in yourself or lose belief in yourself, compassion will hold it all together and keep the peace. Compassion for yourself heals. Its deep healing power can bring you out of your illness so that you gain your confidence back again and your belief in yourself becomes stronger and stronger. Still, we don't control the world. There's always going to be not peace out there. We can't control the free will of the billions of souls on this planet. We can gain control over the peace in ourselves. We can work on creating peace within our bodies by tending to the needs of the liver, the body's physical peacekeeper. And we can cultivate compassion, the body's non-physical peacekeeper. If you fixate on controlling everyone else's free will, you're not going to have peace, nor are you going to bring peace to those around you. Say an iconic figure lived his life focused on world peace, at the same time giving his child no compassion or peace. The child, who just wanted to be acknowledged and accepted, instead suffered and suffered as his father focused on trying to change the world. It's a classic case of how we can focus in the wrong direction. The plumber who can't get to the plumbing in her own home, that's not her fault. She needs to make her living focused on everyone else's toilets. The proverbial shoemaker whose children have no shoes, so their steps aren't peaceful, that's justifiable. He needs to handcraft and sell every scrap of leather in order to make sure his family has food on the table. What's not justifiable is when the peacemaker's children have no peace. The hobbyist peacemaker, the passion-driven person who follows the delusion that he'll be able to control the free will of over 7 billion people, and that this lofty goal exempts him from obligations to those closest to him, is working against his very dream. That's because there's a difference between passion and compassion. It's passion that we celebrate and even exalt. And just as with love, it does have its value. Yet we get lost, putting everything into our passions or thinking that passion is a free pass. It's not. If you have passion for someone, it's not the same as having compassion for that person. They're mixed up easily all the time. People believe they're one and the same. If you have passion for a charitable cause, It doesn't mean you're going to have compassion for it and the people it serves. Maybe you do feel that compassion. It's not automatic if you have passion, though. That's the difference. Although so often, passion is seen as compassion. They're two separate forces. If you have a passion for a certain pastime or mission, that doesn't equate to putting compassion into pursuing it, or remembering to look up from your singular focus to take care of yourself. You could be so fixated on passion that you miss out, too, on providing compassion at home so that the ones you love can walk in shoes of peace. We can't mistake passion for compassion. It's an absolute disaster. Just look to the examples throughout history of those who've pursued a passion for world peace while neglecting to tap into compassion. Only when love and confidence and forgiveness and passion come together with compassion can they drive us toward a better world. The will to be free. Let's go back to one thought: free will. As important as faith is, faith alone does not create peace around us. Every person's free will allows that soul to choose as she or he wants, and if that's not a peaceful state of some kind, then it's not a peaceful state. We don't have control over other individuals. We don't have control over whether they take care of their livers or experience peace within themselves or take a peaceful route in life. Still, free will is necessary. It grants us the opportunity to be free from others' designs on our lives. It allows us to make mistakes so that we can learn from them. Free will is also essential in our personal searches for peace. Even though free will is what allows some to choose the opposite of peace, if free will did not exist, we could not choose to search for peace within ourselves. In this world, we may not get the opportunity to be free from every concern, worry, and problem. We do get our own will to try to find our own peace and freedom. You don't need to be what you think of as a spiritual person to want peace within yourself. You don't need to be some enlightened being to seek out the basic, responsible direction of finding peace. If you feel you're maybe not a spiritual type of person, it doesn't mean you don't have the power and glory of seeing what's right and wrong around and inside of you. You could be a working mum who doesn't have time to dedicate yourself to spiritual books and classes, or the opportunity to head to your favourite sanctuary or church or monument for regular, devoted prayer. Don't let this make you feel like you're not enlightened enough. If you're looking around and thinking that another, like maybe a spiritually seeking neighbour, has more peace within herself or himself, don't worry. You don't need to circle the globe and pray on top of a mountain in order to find or sustain peace. Being spiritual is a mindset that many people choose, and it doesn't mean their hearts are truly in it. People who spend a lifetime searching for peace on retreats and ventures have difficulty finding it. I've seen people come down from their mountaintop retreats after 30 days or 6 months, and they still don't have peace. Some people use their wealth to put themselves in glorious surroundings, and while, like the travellers, they may find moments of peace, the peace is not sustained. Little do they know they've been searching for the wrong thing. In order to get that peace, they need to be seeking compassion. You could be in a straw shack, in a straw bed, in squalor, starving with sores all over your body, and you may have more peace than someone with the greatest riches in the most pristine, beautiful environment, or someone who has the ability and resources to pray in sanctuaries all over the world. It's all about whether you're tapping into compassion for yourself and others. The same path to peace is available to you as to anyone who's gone on months-long retreats or climbed the highest mountains. Compassion. We often forget about our own bodies, our own organs, and focus instead on what's outside of us. For survival, we're forced in this day and age to pay constant, vigilant attention to the steady stream of updates about what's going on out there, especially when we're going through a challenging time or when someone is challenging us. We're forced to pay vigilant attention to what's going on around us. If we spend all our time like this, worrying about others, whether they're around us or far away, we lose ourselves. We give away our own peace from heart, soul, and physical body when we try to die out fires that we can't control. This doesn't mean we should be narcissists. It doesn't mean caring only about ourselves or loving only ourselves. It doesn't mean we shouldn't fight for the causes we believe in, or shouldn't fight for our loved ones. It means that we must bring awareness to what we choose to pursue. The more you think you can control what's happening in the world, the more you lose yourself and the more you give up your inner state of peace. Much of what we try to avoid is unavoidable. You must use your free will to draw on self-compassion and use that self-compassion to choose wisely which fires to put out, what you feel you really can control if you want to keep your physical and emotional state safe and peaceful. All storms pass. Self-compassion. How do we find it? When you're up against a judgment, a crisis, a hardship, the loss of a loved one, an ailing friend or family member, a financial challenge, an injury, an illness, or any of life's other storms, how do you tap into kindness for yourself? First, you see it as that, a storm. Disruptive as hurricanes and blizzards and other storms can be when they come, they do eventually go. When we have bad weather in our personal lives that threatens to rob us of our peace, and then we recognize that all storms pass no matter what, we can hold on to some peace as we're going through that storm. No matter what we think or believe or fear, whether we like it or not, all storms pass. Everything changes. Nothing ever stays the same. It's law. What we often find most peace-disrupting about life's storms is that we have no control over their swirling of darkness onto the radar. Our free will doesn't govern the weather or the weather of life's storms. And yet, it's in that lack of control that we can gain our peace. Even if it's a long storm and you've been in it for years, it will still pass because nothing stays the same. Nothing. The fact that this law is out of our hands, that's where the peace lies. If you're in a storm and you think things are going to get worse, know that the winds may shift. It may get better instead. If it hasn't gotten better yet, it will, because guess what? Everything changes. And if the storm in your life is getting worse, instead of better in the moment, find peace in the fact that it can't stay worse because it has to change. It can't stay the same. Even if you wanted it to stay worse, you couldn't keep it that way. Even if you hated someone so badly that you wanted that person's situation to stay worse, it would change. Even if you had a subliminal desire to be sick, which does not exist anyway, that desire couldn't keep you feeling unwell. Even if you were attracting your illness, which you can't anyway, you couldn't attract it forever. Why? All storms pass. Everything changes. Nothing ever stays the same. We lose our peace thinking something bad is going to happen to us. We lose our peace when something bad does happen to us. We lose our peace when we think we've caused the something bad that happened to us. Yet we have to be seers. We must look past the storm, even while it's happening, by knowing that the storm is ruled by law and will eventually pass. We must see through and beyond the darkness of the storm. We must look ahead. If you fear something bad happening to or around you, let your comfort be that even if it does, it can't define you, because it will leave. You are not what the bad is. No matter what you think or believe, the bad is not you. All too often, we think we deserve the bad in some way, because we're somehow bad. When we realize that the bad is a storm, we can see that we're not part of the storm. Even if the storm seems to call your name with judgment and finger-pointing, a diagnosis, for example, that lays the blame on your body attacking itself, or a trendy theory that tells a mother with a sick child that she's taking the wrong steps for him to get better. Whatever it is, the storm is not you. Find compassion for yourself in that knowledge, and then use the peace that self-compassion gives you to separate yourself from the storm. Know that the storm won't stay even if you wanted it to, that you have no control over the fact that it will pass because the storm isn't you. The bad isn't you. The bad doesn't define you. The struggle that's happening isn't who you are. If sickness is your storm, find compassion and peace in knowing that your body would never attack itself and that it loves you unconditionally. Even when it comes to overloading the liver, the problem still isn't you. You didn't know what your liver needed. The world hasn't given you support for your liver. Understanding all this, you can navigate your ship through the storm and the darkness. When the rain starts to come down and the waves start to tip you from side to side, you can be a visionary, witnessing the wonders that still live beneath the surface and seeing that you'll find safe harbour again. In the meantime, your boat is keeping you sheltered and bringing you peace, and that boat is the knowledge that the storm will pass. Someone's picking on you. Everything changes. Nothing stays the same. Going through heartbreak, everything changes. Nothing stays the same. You lose your soulmate, and you think you'll go soulmateless forever. Everything changes. Nothing ever stays the same. All storms pass. From that wisdom, you can see that you are not the source of your suffering. It's life's weather, and you get to take steps to protect yourself from it. Living words. Because the words you've heard throughout this audiobook come from Spirit of the Most High, the Spirit of Compassion, they're alive. That's right. There are words that are dead and words that have life to them. Anyone who puts heart and soul into their writing doesn't write dead words. If you're speaking from your heart and soul, those words are not dead. Then there are words that are regurgitated or taken from another source, or meant to manipulate. Those words can be dead. And then there are words that live forever. The words here really are living words. It's not just because I put my heart and soul into writing them. It's because they come from a spiritual source. These words will always be here for generations to come. They will always shine, no matter the times. They will never grow old and useless, because what Spirit gives me to document is health scripture. And Spirit is the living essence of the word compassion. Even if there are moments when you feel you cannot persevere, these words will persevere for you. They're here for you to grab onto. They're the hands that reach out to pull you up when you're hanging from a cliff. Living words hold light. Dead words can hold darkness. Because of their source, the living words throughout this book hold light and purge the sickness, which is darkness, out of people. Dead words can take people into the darkness. They can lead us to dead ends, whether we realize it in the moment or not. Sometimes they deceive us with smoke and mirrors or mirages. If we follow them, in the end we'll find ourselves disillusioned. Not that dead words can't have meaning. We can still learn from them. The same way we can learn from studying pressed flowers, careful not to touch or hold them and turn them to dust. Living words are like the flowers still in the field. Even if trust has been broken and the hope inside your heart and soul is diminished from your journeys, living words can be the hope you feel you've lost. When you're blinded by struggle, living words can see for you until you're ready to see the light through your own eyes. While dead words, wherever they come from, whether health literature or elsewhere, can become a part of you over time that keeps you weighted down, living words elevate you. They have the power to release you. Be the beacon. When we throw the word peace around, without focusing on what it truly means, we lessen its value to the point that it registers as a throwaway rag, a crumpled tissue, a used paper cup. It becomes a pop word that holds no real power. Spoken aloud, it doesn't enter the heart or the soul of the person who hears it. It bounces off us because it doesn't hold the meaning it once did long ago. When we re-engage with peace's meaning, we find a feeling that takes us over and takes our breath away for a moment. Peace that's like being bundled in a warm blanket, like sunlight on the skin, like a hot home-cooked meal on a cold night, all of it connected to a benevolent force above that's somehow telling us that no matter what happens, it's going to be okay in the end. True peace holds power and gives you relief. A window into freedom from what this world puts us through and sometimes takes from us. Freedom you can use to heal. The minute you have compassion for yourself, you've connected yourself to what's behind the stars. You've connected yourself to the heavens. You've connected yourself to God. From that comes peace. As someone who has experienced hardship, you can have more peace, even if you're still struggling, than someone you'd think has the ultimate freedom. Someone who's never been thwarted along the way, who's never had to stop and look inside. What you've endured in your heart, spirit, soul, body, and being has brought you to the place where everything else falls away. And you can see that compassion is the truest part of who we are. You've gotten to witness that even through trials and setbacks, you're still worthy. While your compassion doesn't mean that you can snap your fingers and fix the world, it does mean you can change others' worlds. Not by trying to control them, simply by being. When you find peace within yourself by connecting to the living words you've absorbed throughout these chapters, you become a beacon that lights the way for others. Let me tell you truly, the light you hold rids the darkness, for the darkness cannot exist with light present. With your compassion, you can instill peace in loved ones and others who come to you for help. Even if they haven't overcome their emotional, physical, or spiritual struggles yet, the experience of compassion from you can grant instant moments of peace that may even stay and become part of them. It's a power within you granted from above by the Spirit of Compassion and the Angel of Peace for you to do your divine, holy work on this planet. Let me tell you truly, you hold great power within. Peace be with you. Acknowledgements. Thank you to Patty Gift, Anne Barthel, Reed Tracy, Marguerite Nielsen, Diane Hill, everyone at Hay House Radio, and the rest of the Hay House team for your faith and commitment to getting Spirit's wisdom out into the world so it can continue to change lives. Helen Lazichan and Pharrell Williams, you are extraordinarily kind-hearted seers. Gwyneth Paltrow, Elise Lohanen, and your devoted Goop crew, your caring and generosity are a profound inspiration. Dr. Christiane Northrup, your inexhaustible devotion to the health of womankind has become its own star in the universe. Dr. Prudence Hall, your selfless work to enlighten patients who need answers renews the true heroic meaning of the word doctor. Craig Kalman, thank you for your support, advocacy, and friendship on this journey. Chelsea Field and Scott, Will, and Owen Bakula, how did I get so blessed to have you in my life? You are true crusaders for the medical medium cause. Kimberly and James Vanderbeek, there's a special place in my heart for you and your family. I'm truly thankful to have crossed paths with you in this lifetime. Nancy Chambers and David James, Stephanie and Wyatt Elliott, I can't thank you enough for your dear friendship and everlasting encouragement. Lisa Gregorich Dempsey, your acts of kindness have been deeply meaningful. Grace Hightower De Niro, Robert De Niro and family, you are precious, gracious beings. Liv Tyler, it's such a great honor to be a part of your world. Jenna Dewan, your fighting spirit is an inspiration to behold. Lisa Renner, thank you for tirelessly using your influence to spread the message. Marcela Valladolid, knowing you is a gift in my life. Kelly Noonan, thank you for always looking out for me. It means so much. To the following special souls, whose loyalty I treasure, my thanks go out. Jennifer Aniston, Calvin Harris, Michael Bernard Beckwith, Leanne Rimes Cyprian, Hannah Hollinger, Sharon Levin, Naina Robert and Uma Thurman, Jenny Mollen, Jessica Seinfeld, Jennifer Meyer, Kelly Osborne, Demi Moore, Kyle Richards, Caroline Fleming, India Ari, Kristen Bauer, Taylor Schilling, Kerry Walsh Jennings, Rosonda Thomas, Peggy Romito, Debbie Gibson, Carol Scott, and Christiana Ricci. Peggy Lipton, Kidada Jones, and Rashida Jones. Naomi Campbell, Jamie Lynn Siegler, Amanda Decadney, Marianne Williamson, Gabriel Bernstein, Sophia Bush, Maha Dakil, Bhavani Lev, and Bharat Mitra. Woody Fraser, Milena Munroy, Midge Hussey, and everyone at Hallmark's Home and Family. Morgan Fairchild, Patty Stanger, Catherine, Sophia and Laura Bark, Annabeth Gish, Robert Wisdom, Danielle Laporte, Nick and Brenna Ortner, Jessica Ortner, Mike Dooley, Drew Perohit, Chris Carr, Kate Northrup, Christina Carrillo Bookram, Anne Louise Gittleman, Jan and Panache Desai, Amy Beach and Mark Shadle, Brian Wilson, Robert and Michelle Colt, John Holland, Martin Jean Elizabeth and Jacqueline Shafaroff, Kim Lindsay, Jill Black Zalben, Alexandra Cohen, Christine Hill, Carol Donahue, Caroline Levitt, Michael Sandler and Jessica Lee, Koya Webb, Jenny Hutt, Adam Cushman, Sonia Choquette, Colette Baron-Reed, Denise Lynn, and Carmel Joy Baird, I deeply value you all. To the compassionate doctors and other healers of the world who have changed the lives of so many, I have tremendous respect for you. Dr. Alejandro Junger, Dr. Habib Siddiqui, Dr. Carol Lee, Dr. Richard Solazzo, Dr. Jeff Feynman, Dr. Diana Minich, Dr. Ron Steriti, Dr. Nicole Galante, Dr. Diana Lapusny, Dr. Dick and Noel Shepherd, Dr. Alexandra Phillips, Dr. Chris Maloney, Drs. Tosca and Gregory Haig, Dr. Dave Klein, Dr. Deborah Kern, Dr. Darren and Suzanne Bowles, Dr. Deirdre Williams and the late Dr. John McMahon, and Dr. Robin Carlin, it's an honour to call you friends. Thank you for your endless dedication to the field of healing. Thanks to David Schmerler, Kimberly S. Grimsley, and Susan G. Etheridge for being there for me. A very warm, heartfelt thanks to Muniza Ahmed, Lauren Henry, Tara Tom, Bella, Gretchen Manza, Kimberly Spare, Stephanie Tizone, Megan Elizabeth McDonnell, Ellen Fisher, Hannah McNeely, Victoria and Michael Arnstein, Nina Leatherer, Michelle Sutton, Haley Cataldo, Kerry, Amy Bashler, Michael McMenamin, Alexandra Laws, Esther Horn, Linda and Robert Koikendahl, Tanya Akeem, Heather Coleman, Glenn Klausner, Carolyn DeVito, Michael Monteleone, Bobby and Leslie Hall, Catherine Belzowski, Matt and Vanessa Houston, David Holly and Ginny Whitney, Olivia Amitrano and Nick Vasquez, Melody Lee Pence, Tara Appleman, Eileen Crispell, Bianca Carrillo Bucaram, Jennifer Rose Rossano, Kristin Cassidy, Catherine Lawton, Taylor Call, Alana DiNardo, Min Lee, and Eden Epstein Hill. Thank you to the countless people, including those in the medical medium communities, whom I've had the privilege and honour of seeing blossom, heal and transform. Thank you to the practitioner support group. Bless you for sharing the value of your experiences and carrying your teachings to others. You are changing the world. Sally Arnold, thank you for shining your light so brightly and lending your voice to the movement. Ruby Scattergood, your masterful patience and countless hours of dedication have heroically formed the true spine of this book. The Medical Medium series would not be possible without your writing and editing. Thank you for your literary counsel. Viboda and Tilla Clark, your creative genius has been astoundingly instrumental to the cause of helping others. Thank you for standing with us throughout the years. Friar and Claire. In the midst of the street of it, and on either side of the river, was there the tree of life, which bare 12 manner of fruits, and yielded her fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. Sapida Kashanian and Ben, thank you for your warm, loving care. Ashley, Britton and McLean Foster and Sterling Phillips, thank you for all your hard work and devotion. We're blessed to have you by our side. Jeff Skierick, thank you for the best pictures, man. John Morelli and Noah, you two are all heart. Robbie Barbro and Sitara Katibi, your unwavering positivity lifts up everyone around you. For your love and support, as always, I thank my family, my luminous wife, dad and mum, my brothers, nieces, nephews, aunts and uncles, my champions, Indigo, Ruby and Great Blue, Hope, Marjorie and Robert, Laura, Rhea and Byron, Elaine Searle and Scott, Perry, Lissy and Ari Cohn, David Somaroff, Joel, Liz, Cody, Jesse, Lauren, Joseph and Thomas, Brian, Joyce and Josh, Jared, Brent, Kelly and Evie, Danielle, Johnny and Declan, and all my loved ones who are on the other side. Finally, thank you, Spirit of the Most High, for providing all of us with compassionate wisdom from the heavens that inspires us to keep our heads up and carry the sacred gifts you've been so kind to give us. Thank you for putting up with me over the years and reminding me to keep a light heart with your never-ending patience and willingness to answer my questions in search of the truth. About the author. Anthony William, number one New York Times best-selling author of Medical Medium Thyroid Healing, The Truth Behind Hashimoto's, Graves, Insomnia, Hyperthyroidism, Thyroid Nodules and Epstein-Barr, Medical Medium Life-Changing Foods, Save Yourself and the Ones You Love with the Hidden Healing Powers of Fruits and Vegetables, and Medical Medium, Secrets Behind Chronic and Mystery Illness and How to Finally Heal, was born with the unique ability to converse with the Spirit of Compassion, who provides him with extraordinarily accurate health information that's often far ahead of its time. Since age 4, when he shocked his family by announcing that his symptom-free grandmother had lung cancer, which medical testing soon confirmed, Anthony has been using his gift to read people's conditions and tell them how to recover their health. His unprecedented accuracy and success rate as the medical medium have earned him the trust and love of millions worldwide, among them movie stars, rock stars, billionaires, professional athletes, best-selling authors, and countless other people from all walks of life who couldn't find a way to heal until he provided them with insights from spirit. Anthony has also become an invaluable resource to doctors who need help solving their most difficult cases. Learn more at www.medicalmedium.com. This has been a Hay House Incorporated production of Medical Medium Liver Rescue. Answers to eczema, psoriasis, diabetes, strep, acne, gout, bloating, gallstones, adrenal stress, fatigue, fatty liver, weight issues, SIBO and autoimmune disease. Written by Anthony William. Read by Sarah Coombs. Produced by Shalin Venture and Steve Morris. Recorded by Zeev Fisher. Medical Medium Liver Rescue is also available in print formats from Hay House, Inc. Text copyright 2018 by Anthony William. Audio production copyright 2018, all rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.